The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall in tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes, the families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org. Or call or text 988, available 24/7.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie, because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you're streaming, gaming, video chatting, or doing it all at once, gig speed internet from Xfinity makes you a multitasking champion. That's simple, easy, awesome. Go online, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit today. Restrictions apply.
Why is the White House reading Greek history? That's the question that was asked earlier in the week in Politico. The real question is, why are the top advisors of the Trump administration sitting around thinking about and discussing an ancient Greek historian named Thucydides, who wrote a seminal work about the Peloponnesian War? Now, this is not new, that this historical work, which is one of the most important tracts of military history ever written. It is taught frequently in international relations programs. It is assigned reading at the U.S. Army War College. Thucydides is one of those voices from the past that is often brought forward to elucidate the challenges of the present. And as you know, I am fond of ancient Greek history and wish I could even spend much more time both reading and studying it and then sharing it with you on the show than I'm able to at this point. But maybe one day in the future, there will be more fulsome deep dives on the subject. But the White House right now is concerned with the Peloponnesian War. And I wanted to give you some background on it and then talk about what the lessons are that they may be trying to draw from it, or at least looking at the challenges and understanding the historical impulses that pushed the leadership in 5th century BC Greece, ancient Greece, to make decisions that I think a lot of people today would see and draw parallels to any number of U.S. conflicts in the recent past and just the realities of warfare. So the Peloponnesian War is not as well known as, say, the war against, and outside of academic and military circles, as, say, the war against Persian invaders because of movies like 300 and King Leonidas and the 300 Spartans at the Hot Gates, the Pass of Thermopylae, there are some pop culture references to other ancient Greek conflicts. The movie with Alexander the Great, which, as I understand it, and Colin Farrell starring as Alexander, was not particularly good. But you haven't seen a major theatrical production of the Peloponnesian War. And I think that it would actually be a phenomenal subject for such a Hollywood treatment, because if you made this into a miniseries, people would see the very clear parallels to many of the problems we face today. And they're problems that are timeless, really. You've faced them all throughout history in matters of war and politics and the realities therein. So the Peloponnesian War is, as I said, 5th century Athens, and it stretches on for 27 years, from 431 to 404 BC. So this is cross-generational. It goes on for decades, and it pitted two mighty states, the mightiest states of ancient Greece, the most famous ones, Athens and Sparta, against each other in what became a death struggle. And it ended with Sparta besieging Athens, the city-state of Athens, and breaking it off from its sea route as well, destroying the long walls, which were barriers created between the city-state of Athens and its port of Piraeus, which was a couple of miles away. And Athens was never the same, really, after this. So it started out as a conflict that would have been similar to many others. In ancient Greece, hoplite warfare, which was only engaged in by citizens of the city-state who could afford the armor, the breastplate, the shield. In fact, the shield known as a hoplon is where we get the term hoplite from. Hoplites were heavy armored infantry, and that's what we generally think of. Shields locked, interconnected, and hoplites holding a spear and also having a short sword for thrusting. But this conflict between Sparta and Athens had been building for some time, and it quickly spiraled out of control. And to really understand why people draw parallels between Athens and modern America, for example, and its fight with Sparta, which has been viewed in the context of a Cold War paradigm, where Sparta, it was a landlocked power of militarism and oppression. In fact, the Spartans relied on a vast army of slaves, of helots, to do the farm work and to support this professional standing army in Sparta. And to become a member of that army, you had to go through an incredibly rigorous school that started in adolescence called the Agoge. So it's almost like basic underwater demolition school for the Navy SEALs, you know, buds, but it's buds that you would start when you were a teenager and you never really got out of it. That Sparta has been viewed in the context of trying to find a historical analogy to today as a Cold War enemy of Athens, or rather as a Cold War parallel between Athens and Sparta, with Athens as the United States and Sparta as the Soviet Union. Major land power, oppression, totalitarian. Athens, of course, with a population, a city-state population, that was only really in the same hundreds of thousands, you'd say. And the entirety of the Greek peninsula, it should be noted, is the size of a mid-sized U.S. state. So this conflict was playing out predominantly on what is a pretty small landmass, although Athens was also overseeing a vast empire at the time. It had city-states that paid tribute to it. It was a naval power, again, bring us back to the Cold War U.S. versus Soviet paradigm, and it had really vassal states that it could call upon from all across the Mediterranean. So what were two city states that weren't really that large squaring off against each other also brought in much of the ancient world through a battle that went on for decades. The Peloponnesian War, of course, is named for the Peloponnese, which is a peninsula separated from the rest of mainland Greece by the Gulf of Corinth. Those of you who are longtime members of Team Buck know the Gulf of Corinth is the scene of the great Battle of Lepanto between the Allied Ottoman forces and those of Christian Europe in 1571, an enormous naval battle that we will have to revisit this fall on its anniversary. But I digress. So the Peloponnese was the peninsula where you could find the ancient cities of Sparta, Argos, and Corinth, among others. And that's part of what we don't get in most of our reading about ancient Greece, is that there were other major city-states, Corinth, Thebes, that played a role in not just the battle or the Peloponnesian War, but in ancient Greece's growth and in the major battles, including against the invading Persian hordes. But without question, the two major city-states at the time were Sparta and Athens. So you had two great powers of the period, including Athens in all of its splendor with its art, its culture, its democracy, which of course didn't mean everybody got to vote. It just meant citizens, which was a very a small percentage of the overall population were allowed to vote. But ancient Athens, which is the cradle of Western civilization, was squaring off against Sparta, a militaristic, totalitarian, really, society, certainly authoritarian, in what didn't seem like it would be all that different from previous fights. There would be city-states would fight, and it would be over the allegiance of another city-state or a relatively short-term and minor in the historical scope grievance. But the Peloponnesian War, and by the way, it's thought of as the Athenian War by others in it, and Thucydides, who's not just a great historian, but was a general in this war, was in Athens during one of the plagues. So when you talk about Thucydides, and I think one of the reasons why he has so much respect as a historian among military men of today and honestly for many centuries, is that, and he's read by all the great military theorists and historians, is because he was a practitioner as well as a great writer and historian. He was a general who squared off against the Spartans. He knew this warfare firsthand. He was there. He lived it. He was a part of it. So you get a very particular view from Thucydides. And I highly recommend, if you are looking for gripping reading that, you know, is written in historical narrative form but is true and is accurate, just pick up the Peloponnesian War. But I think when you look at the historians and why they try to draw from this for today, and back to our article about why the Trump White House is having meetings, according to this Politico piece, where they discuss just the history of ancient Greece. Think about this. And they have the top military and national security minds in this administration are readers of Thucydides, are history buffs when it comes to ancient Greece, is because they see the this great power conflict of the time. There are similar dynamics, and in this case, it may be that the dynamic is between the U.S. and China. In the past, people had said it was between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, and looking for similarities and points of comparison. One part of the Peloponnesian War that is so compelling, both as reading and as a means of understanding how war and the politics around it really functions and operates, is that it became quickly a total war. It became a war of annihilation, of extermination of cities, of sieges that ended with the massacre of all inhabitants. This had not been the standard operating procedure on the Greek peninsula in the 5th century BC, but this war quickly accelerated, and it became not just a limited conflict between a Spartan military that besieged Athens for a period of time. Because remember, these soldiers were on a season that had to do with the harvest. There was a limited campaigning season, and so usually conflicts were limited in scope. This became a total war on the peninsula and across the Mediterranean. It even involved an expedition to Syracuse in Sicily that was disastrous for the Athenians. It stretched on for years and years. You had, during this period, Pericles, the most famous of all ancient Greek Athenian leaders, give his funeral oration, one of the most famous speeches in all history. And when you see how the decisions were made at the time, there was passion, there was patriotism, there were fears about the annihilation, not just of a military force, but of the people back home if the military was unsuccessful. There was treachery, there was backstabbing, there was betrayal by different allies. All of these different factors were brought together in a conflict that was entirely among people who spoke the same language, roughly speaking, had the same culture, and you'd think would be able to settle their differences in a way that would have been much more amenable and much more positive for both sides. But the Peloponnesian War is really in the 5th century BC, again, 27 years from 431 to 404 BC, would be better described as the Great Greek Civil War. And it was, as I said, a war that turned into a total war, war of annihilation and extermination. And that's why people also look at how did this happen? How did they get to that point? And then look for lessons for today in the context of the U.S.-China relationship. It's, I think, a stretch to find all that much of a comparison right now because of many of the economic ties that we have between the U.S. and China, the distance between the two countries. But people would say in the Peloponnesian War, you had battles waged far afield from Spartan and from Sparta and Athens that were proxy battles, proxy wars. Well, there certainly could be similar situations between the U.S. and China going into the future. But the Peloponnesian War is if you're interested in ancient Greece at all, it is essential. It is must reading. And that the White House is thinking about this, is talking to historians about it and looking at it as a place for wisdom and perhaps even some answers as to long-term U.S. foreign policy trajectory. I think they're looking for wisdom in a smart place. I think that this is a worthwhile endeavor for them. And I'm glad that I was able to give you a little bit of why the Peloponnesian War is of such interest and why Thucydides, the ancient Greek historian, makes for such compelling reading. By the way, if you want a more recent version of this, A War Like No Other by Victor Davis Hanson is a fantastic book, and I highly recommend it. We will hit a quick break here, team. We'll be right back.
Keep the devices in your home protected from Wi-Fi threats with Xfinity XFi. If it's connected, it's protected. Now that's simple, easy, awesome. Go online, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit today. Restrictions apply.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and built specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
to the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.